greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 110 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on fairy tales when we come back. Hey, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? Because it's pretty obvious by now that something is wrong with the Ten Commandments because they've been banned from our public schools. They're banned from our public institutions, and they're banned now from our national consciousness. Now, instead of these ten simple time-tested laws, we see the ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in their place, and they're teaching these ten planks to the Communist Manifesto in our schools, in our public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, you know, this is a pretty radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? Are you aware, for instance, your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent? But your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent. Now, that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. And our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal Constitution. Now, there's still one school left in America that teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments, and all 759 statutes, judgments, and penalties, as well as the 33 benefits that we all receive for their observance. Now, you know, every law has a penalty. You do not have to know what the penalty is to suffer from its effect. So whether we call this the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, Common Law, Natural Law, Karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happened to be the natural penalty for adultery. Now, if you'd like more information, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package? That's the place to start. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. And it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number's 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about fairy tales. Adults believe in fairy tales. We like a good story. Now, generally speaking, we think of fairy tales like Goldilocks and the Three Bears, or Snow White and the Dwarves, or Cinderella, as being children's fairy tales, stories for little children. And I started the series, I said, we've got a little girl here on the farm, and she has a fairy house down in the woods, and she goes down there, and she brings cookies to the fairy house, and she leaves them there, and the next morning, the cookies are gone. Well, that's pretty logical. You know, if you take cookies down to your fairy house and leave them overnight, and you go down the next day and the cookies are gone, those are cookies for fairies. The cookies are gone, so obviously the fairies came and took the cookies. It doesn't enter the child's mind that maybe a possum, a coon, or a rat came in and took the cookie. But she took it down there for the fairies, and it's gone, and so therefore the fairies must have taken it. Now, that's elementary logic at the 8-year-old level. And, you know, it's kind of cute. I'm not quite sure why we should lie to children. or why we should encourage them in these kinds of fictions. But it probably has something to do with the fact that we as adults believe in these fairy tales. Oh, you don't believe in fairies and fairy houses. I'm not suggesting that. But you believe in vaccination, don't you? Well, 88% of us do here in the United States. Only 12% of the population here in the United States are opposed to vaccination, or think they're opposed to it, or would like to be opposed to it, or tell people that they're opposed to it. 88% embrace vaccination, like the little girl embraces fairies and fairy houses. And they believe in it. And these are people that are sincere, I'm sure. These are health professionals, nurses, and doctors. These are people that may be engineers and scientists, as well as truck drivers and housewives and so on. So I thought we'd take up the subject here of the fairy tale of vaccination, because I had a woman tell me one time that vaccination has saved mankind. Mankind has been saved through vaccination. Now, I reported to you earlier that there was a young woman here that said that it's the right of every American to have health care insurance. I didn't know that, so I made a whole report on that health care insurance thing over there. I'm not concerned about health care. I really don't want it. I'm perfectly satisfied doing what I'm doing, the way I'm doing it. There are other people out there, though, that want to force this health care insurance upon me against my will and over my objection. Well-meaning people, I'm sure. People that are smarter than I am, I'm sure. And they know they're smarter than I am, and they know how dumb I am, and so they want to do for me what I'm unable to do for myself. See the wisdom of health care insurance. And the same thing goes with vaccination. In fact, they're so sincere, they have laws enacted. And these laws require me to get vaccinated, or they require me to vaccinate my children. And so I have to work hard to resist this vaccination. So I thought I'd share with you this fairy tale. Vaccination. Should we dispel the myth of vaccination? You know, an examination of an immunization theory and practice exposes some fatal flaws that warrant serious consideration and urgent action by health officials, doctors, and the public. This is an article written by Alan Phillips back in 1996, published by a group called Vaccine Awareness. They're located at Post Office Box 62-282 in Durham, North Carolina. Again, that's Vaccination Awareness, P.O. Box 62-282 in Durham, North Carolina. The zip code is 27715-2282. There's zip code again, 27715-2282. He starts off by saying that when my son began his routine vaccination series at age 2 months, I did not know that there were any risks associated with immunizations. But the clinic's literature contained a contradiction. The chances of a serious adverse reaction to the DPT vaccine were 1 in 1,750, while the chances of dying from pertussis were just 1 in 7 million. All right, now let me pause right here. If you take your child in to have a vaccination, the chances of your child dying from an adverse reaction to that DPT vaccine are 1 in 1,750, but the chances of your child dying from pertussis is 1 in 7 million. So if he doesn't have the vaccine, he has a 1 in 7 million chance of dying. If he has the vaccine, we can increase his chances of dying to 1 out of every 1,700. Well, 1,750. Now, let's pause here for a moment. Let's suppose, for the sake of our discussion, that this pertussis vaccine is 100% effective, and that if your child has this vaccine, he absolutely will not get pertussis. Okay? You have protected your child from a 1 in 7 million event, but you have now exposed him to a 1 in 1750 event that he will die. Now, you know, kids, we don't really have to go to advanced mathematics to figure out that the vaccine is many, many, many times more hazardous to your child's health. And I'm going to give you the times here. Let's plug in 7 million into our famous Sharp EL1197G3 computer. And let's divide that by 1750. You have advanced your child's chances of dying by giving him the DPT vaccine by 4,000 times. He is 4,000 times more likely to die from the vaccine than he is to die from the disease by giving him that vaccine. Now, you know, kids, as an old farmer sitting out here in the countryside, I look at that kind of numbers and I say, you know, that sounds kind of like evolution. Remember a couple days ago we talked about evolution. These boys can't get their numbers straight either. And these vaccine people over here, they published this. I mean, hell, it's right there in the literature. I'm just reporting to you what the hell these guys are telling us. Now, I got to tell you, honest to God, that it's total hearsay on my part to say that your chances of getting pertussis is 1 in 7 million. I wouldn't have known that if I hadn't read it here in the article. What the hell do I know? I'm not out here counting people that are dying from pertussis. Furthermore, I don't know how many children who are vaccinated with the pertussis vaccine die from the adverse reaction from it. They report that the number is 1,750. So I'm just taking the scientists' numbers. I'm just taking the doctor's numbers. I'm just taking the numbers from the CDC. They're the guys that reported it. You know, and as dumb as I am, with my little Sharp EL1197G3, I plug in the numbers and I say, oh my God, you'd have to be a lunatic to have your child vaccinated. Why would you want to increase your child's chances of dying by 4,000 times? Hell, I didn't want my kid to die at all. That's why I took him in to get the vaccine. Now I find out that if I give him the vaccine, he's got 4,000 times greater chance of dying than if I left him alone. Okay, that's number one. Did you get that one, children? So soon after I learned of a child who had been permanently disabled by a vaccine, so I decided to investigate it for myself. And my findings have so alarmed me that I feel compelled to share them. So here's this report. Health authorities credit vaccines for disease declines, and they assure us of their safety and effectiveness. And yet these seemingly rock-solid assumptions are directly contradicted by the health statistics, the medical studies, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, and the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, and they all report, and reputable research scientists from around the world report. And in fact, infectious diseases declined steadily for decades prior to the introduction of vaccines. U.S. doctors report thousands of serious vaccine reactions every year, including hundreds of deaths and permanent disabilities. Fully vaccinated populations have experienced epidemics, and researchers attribute dozens of chronic immunological and neurological conditions to mass immunization programs. There are hundreds of published medical studies documenting vaccine failure and adverse effects, and dozens of books written by doctors, researchers, and independent investigators that reveal serious flaws in immunization theory and practice. Ironically, most pediatricians and parents are completely unaware of these findings. However, this has begun to change in recent years as a growing number of parents and healthcare providers around the world are becoming aware of the problems and are starting to question the use of widespread mandatory vaccinations. Now, my point is not to tell anyone whether or not to vaccinate. but rather my point is, with the utmost urgency, to point out some very good reasons why everyone should examine the facts before you decide whether or not to submit to this procedure. So, as a parent, I was shocked to discover the absence of a legal mandate or professional ethic requiring pediatricians to be fully informed and to see firsthand the prevalence of physicians who are applying practices based on incomplete information, and in some cases, just plain outright misinformation. Now, though only a brief introduction, this report contains sufficient evidence to warrant further investigation by everyone concerned, which I highly recommend. And you'll find this is the only way to get an objective view, as the controversy is a highly emotional controversy. Now, a note of caution. Be careful when you're trying to discuss this subject with your pediatrician. Most pediatricians have staked their identities and their reputations on the presumed safety and effectiveness of vaccines, and thus they have difficulty acknowledging evidence to the contrary. The first pediatrician I attempted to share my findings with yelled angrily at me when I calmly brought up the subject, and the misconceptions have some very deep roots. Vaccination myth number one: vaccines are completely safe. All right, here's vaccine myth number one. These vaccines are completely safe. That's a fairy tale. The FDA's Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System receives about 11,000 reports of serious adverse reactions to vaccination annually. Some 1%, that's 112 plus, of which are deaths from vaccine reactions. The majority of these reports are made by doctors, and the majority of the deaths are attributed to pertussis, that's called whooping cough vaccine, the P in the DPT. This figure alone should be alarming, and yet it's only the tip of the iceberg. The FDA estimates only about 10% of adverse reactions are reported. All right, now let's pause here for a moment. First of all, these vaccines are completely safe. And yet we find out that there's 11,000 reports that come in from doctors around the country to the Food and Drug Administration. This is the FDA's Vaccine Adverse Effects Reporting System. They receive about 11,000 reports every year. Out of those 11,000, 112 children have been killed. But the doctors only report 10% of the adverse reactions. So, if 11,000, boys and girls, is the number being reported and they report 10%, let's multiply that times 10, and that's 110,000. Now, if 112 died out of the 10% reported, we could take 112 times 10, and then we'd come up with 1120. Now, I suppose you could argue, and probably effectively, that out of 48 million children a year who receive this vaccine, we're only killing 1120 of them. Which is about like saying, well, gee, you know, all of these vaccines combined only turn out one autistic child in 68. And I'm sitting here saying, well, maybe, you know, the other 67 children had their vaccines and they didn't get autism. And then maybe you prevented them from getting whooping cough. But now let's go back here to square one. Only one child in 7 million dies from whooping cough. I'm an old-timey guy, and I had whooping cough when I was a little kid, and I had measles and mumps and all of these childhood diseases, just like all the other little kids do. And here's a little kicker. When you get these childhood diseases when you're a child, you have lifetime immunity. I'm an old man, and I've never had measles again. I'm an old man, I've never had whooping cough twice. I'm an old man. I never had mumps twice. Now, it is true that there are some cases that have been reported where children got the measles and died from it, where a child got the mumps and he died from it, or he got whooping cough and died from it. Now, statistically, the CDC reports to us that if your child gets whooping cough, 1 out of 7 million are going to die. All right, so if your child gets whooping cough, and there's about 48 million children a year here in our public schools, and they have to have these shots now every year. They have to have these booster shots, because these vaccines do not give you lifetime immunity. So if you subjected yourself to the natural processes and did absolutely nothing, you could just about bet that your child, in course of time, is going to come down with whooping cough. And if you divide 7 million into 48 million, that's about 7. So statistically, 7 children in the United States are going to die every year from whooping cough. And so the CDC and the medical professions, they take a look at that and say, oh my God, 7 children die every year from whooping cough. We need a vaccine to prevent whooping cough. All right. So they went out here and they developed a vaccine. Whether this vaccine actually works or not is a question of and by itself. I mean, they could be shooting you up with distilled water and your kid doesn't get whooping cough, and you'd say, that's pretty good. If your kid does get whooping cough, you say, well, God, imagine how sick he'd be if he hadn't had his shot. It sounds like the weather report. See, the weatherman comes along and he said, well, there's a 50% chance of rain tomorrow. So if it rains tomorrow, he was right. And if it doesn't rain tomorrow, he was right. And these vaccine advocates, they have the same philosophy. We're going to give your kid the vaccine. If your kid has the vaccine and he doesn't get sick, we say, well, see, the vaccine worked. If, on the other hand, the child does get sick, we say, well, my God, can you imagine how sick he'd be if he hadn't had the vaccine? Now, you talk about fairy tales. I mean, I got a little girl here. She goes down and feeds cookies to her fairies, and the next morning the cookies are gone. I mean, we've got logic there. If you've got fairy cookies and you take them down to your fairy house and you leave them overnight and the next morning they're gone, it's pretty damn logical. It must have been the fairies that took them when you're 8 years old. Now, we're all adults, and we get a vaccine, and if we don't get sick, it must have been the vaccine that saved us. But if we do get sick, oh my God, thank God we had the vaccine, because I probably would have died without it. Okay, kids. back on your heads. The FDA estimates that only about 10% of adverse reactions are actually reported. How do I know that only 10% of these adverse reactions are reported? Because the FDA reported it to me. This is their story. This is their argument. They're the ones that are promoting it. I don't know how many doctors report and don't report. I'm not out polling the doctors and asking them, when a child comes in, has a vaccine, has an adverse reaction, do you report it? But I can tell you as a lawyer, I can tell you that if I was going to advise a doctor, I would advise him to shut up. Doctors bury their mistakes. Now, you know, if somebody gets an adverse reaction from a vaccine and I report it and I'm the guy that gave them the vaccine, well, then I'm culpable. Now, furthermore, most people who receive vaccines and die from them do not die from vaccine reaction. They die from something else. Let me give you an illustration. Let's suppose you come in and you get a vaccine. And as a result of the vaccine, you die. They do an autopsy on you and they find out that you had a broken vessel. They don't sit there and say the vaccine caused the broken vessel. They don't sit there and say the vaccine caused the toxic condition. They don't say the vaccine caused this condition which led to your death. You know, and they give you a flu vaccine and you develop the flu which turns into pneumonia. They don't sit there and say you died from the flu vaccine. They say you died from pneumonia. People don't die from AIDS. They die from the complications of AIDS. The death certificate doesn't say Joe over here died from AIDS. It says he died from pneumonia or sarcosis, something or other. Wake up and smell the coffee here, kids. So the FDA estimates that only about 10% of adverse reactions are reported, a figure supported by two National Vaccine Information Center investigations. So now there's an outfit called the National Information Center Investigation, and they report the same thing. So we have three witnesses here that say, yeah, it's about 10% that are reported. In fact, the NVIC reported that in New York, only one out of 40 doctors' offices, 2.5%, confirmed that they report a death or injury following vaccination. So 97.5% of vaccine-related deaths and disabilities in New York City go unreported there. Well, if it's going unreported at the rate of 97.5% in New York City, what in the hell makes you people out in Los Angeles or San Francisco or Seattle think that your doctors are reporting these adverse events any more often than the doctors in New York City? Why would a doctor want to report such a thing? After all, that's what he's selling. You know, if I was selling something over here and it didn't work, you know, I'm selling automobiles and the bumpers fall off. You think I'm going to make some report and say, gee, our automobiles, the bumpers fall off of them. We don't put nuts on the bolts. I'm going to cover that up. I'm going to shut up about it. I'm not telling anybody. You think doctors are out here reporting their mistakes so that they can be sued for malpractice? You know, doctors may be criminals, but they're not stupid, as evidenced by the fact that they don't report the adverse results or the adverse events. Implications about the integrity of medical professionals aside, doctors are legally required to report serious adverse events. These findings suggest that vaccine deaths actually occur each year in the United States, and they're well over 1,000. Well, now, even if the vaccines kill 1,000 a year, you know, you're vaccinating 48 million kids a year, and it only kills 1,000. Okay. That's not a very high percentage. What that proves is that most children's immune systems are working at a level that they can withstand that kind of toxic poisoning. My question to you is, why would you want to subject your child to that kind of risk? And you say, well, because I don't want him to get measles. But I just showed you that if you leave your kid alone, his chances of dying from the disease are 4,000 times less than if he has the vaccination. I mean, come on, are you people alive or are you brain dead? Now, I'm aware that there's been a lot of propaganda, and if you're just a normal, average, run-of-the-mill Joe Sixpack American, you believe in vaccinations like this little girl believes in fairies. I mean, it's just as real to you as God Almighty Himself. But, you know, there's another side to the story, and I'm just a reporter. I just thought I'd report to you the other side of the story and let you decide for yourself what you want to do. Let's take polio in the United States. There are no wild polio cases reported in the United States over the last 25 years. Your chances of getting polio, if you have never been vaccinated for polio, you don't get a vaccination for polio, and you don't even know that polio exists, your chances of getting polio are zero. But if you spend $25 and you go down and get your polio shot, your chances of getting polio here in the United States are 1 out of 79. Well, I shouldn't say 1 out of 79. That's not quite correct. Every year in the United States, there are 79 polio cases reported. So we only have 79 on average, 79 polio cases that develop here in the United States. Every single one of those polio cases comes from a vaccinated person who's been vaccinated for polio. Put another way, the 79 people in the United States of America that get polio every year get it from the vaccine. You can't get it any other way. So if you want your kid to get polio, you have to give him the vaccine. There isn't any other way to get it anymore. There's no wild strain left. So now either one of two things has happened. The polio vaccine was so successful it eradicated polio, except for the 79 cases that we give people every year. Now look, 48 million kids a year are getting a polio vaccine and only 79 of them get polio. But if you didn't give the vaccine at all, zero would get polio. Now, did you want 79 or zero? I agree with you that 79 out of 48 million is practically nothing statistically, but, you know, for the 79 people that get it every year, that's a pretty serious event in their lives. For that one child out of every 68 that gets autism, that's a pretty serious event for that one kid out of 68, don't you think? All right. Enough said. Let me give you a reminder here. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 112 countries worldwide over the Internet and radio daily. For more information about the Law School and Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. You can order one for yourself by simply calling and asking for it, and the number to call is 417-273-4967. That's area code 417-273-4967. And then here, finally, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about fairy tales, the myths that grow up in, they call it, on the Internet, they call them urban legends. These are some of these urban legends here. Now, with pertussis, the number of vaccine-related deaths dwarfs the number of disease deaths, which have been about 10 annually for recent years, according to the CDC, and only 8 in 1993, the last peak incidence year. So, here's this pertussis over here, you know, about 1 in 7 million. And in 1993, they had 8. 8 children died from this disease. And this is why we vaccinate our children, is because, you know, if you do not vaccinate your child, he could die from pertussis. Well, that's true. That's true. But if you vaccinate your child, your chances of him dying are 4,000% greater, or maybe one out of 1,000. So 1,000 are going to die with the vaccine, and 8 are going to die without it. So, you know, if you're an adult, and if you haven't been mesmerized by fairy tales, why don't you just work out the math yourself and then ask yourself, what's the best chance of killing my kid, with or without the vaccine? And if you're not brain dead, you should be able to work that out. You know, if you've been past the fourth grade, now in the third grade, you might not have been able to work that out. But if you got through the fourth grade, well, I don't know. I mean, 3 million of you people are graduating from high school every year and can't read your diploma. I'm not sure that a fourth grade education would help you a great deal. You might have to go to a mathematician and have him work that out for you. Going on, simply put, the vaccine is 100 times more deadly than the disease. Given the many instances in which highly vaccinated populations have contracted disease, see myth number two, and the fact that the vast majority of disease declines this century occurred before compulsory vaccination, that is, pertussis deaths declined 79% prior to the introduction of the vaccines. See myth number three. This comparison is a valid one, and this enormous number of vaccine casualties can hardly be considered a necessary sacrifice for the benefit of a disease-free society. Now, I might point out here that the reason for vaccines is not to create a disease-free society. The purpose for the vaccine is to sell 48 million vaccines times $25 so that we can sell $1.2 billion worth of vaccine. That's the purpose behind it. That's what keeps your pediatrician off the streets and out of the pool halls and makes his boat payments and car payments and his house payments. Now, vaccination truth number one. Vaccination causes significant death and disability at an astounding personal financial cost to families and taxpayers. Vaccine myth number one is that vaccines are perfectly safe. And the vaccine truth number one is that vaccination causes significant death and disability at an astounding personal financial cost to families and taxpayers. Now that's where reality is at. Okay, let's take a look at vaccination myth number two. These vaccines are very effective. Okay, I mentioned that to you. Oh my God, can you imagine how sick I'd be if I hadn't gotten my shot? All right. Let me tell you something here about this flu vaccine while we're on that subject. The CDC reports that 90% of deaths from influenza occur among the elderly. These kinds of statistics make it nearly impossible to credit the flu vaccine for prolonging lives in this age group, as 65% of all deaths, regardless of the cause, happen among the elderly. All right, so if we think about this one for a moment, if you're age 65 or more, and you compare that age group with the age groups from 0 to 65, 65% of all of the deaths recorded in America in all age groups occur among this age group, age 65 and up. So the CDC reports that 90% of the deaths from influenza occur among the elderly. So, if we put these numbers together, there are potential dangers to the flu vaccine, particularly to the already vulnerable elderly population. Dr. Hugh Fudenberg, one of the world's leading immunogeneticists, states that your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease is 10 times higher if an individual has 5 consecutive vaccinations than if they only have 1, 2, or 0 vaccines. This is likely due to the thimerosal, a mercury-derived preservative and aluminum content of the vaccine. All right, pause, all you people 65 and older. You've probably, if you're a baby boomer, if you can look back in your lifetime, vaccines started occurring here in the United States in the public school system back here about the 1920s. I mean, they got it in their heads that they needed to give kids vaccines. They had vaccines back in 1850, but they got into this vaccine business back in the 1920s. Now, when I was a kid going to school, you know, looking at the first, second, third, in the first and second grades, they never even thought of it. In the third grade, there were two shots that they wanted to give you. Fortunately for me, I missed them. But most kids back in, you know, 1945, 6, 7, 8, 9, 11, they were getting two vaccines. Today, a child gets 35 vaccines. 35 by age 5. Now, it is true that we have taken the thimerosal out of those 35 vaccines. Out of those 35, we've taken it out of, I think the last number I saw was 5. So now your child is only receiving thimerosal in 30 of the 35 vaccines. Now, in the elderly population, the elderly, they think that it's probably the thimerosal. Because if you get 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shots in a row, you old people, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now, I'm pushing 70. I don't call myself old people. I don't take any medications. I'm supposed to be taking 6 if I was average. I'm supposed to be getting my flu vaccine every year. I avoid that like I avoid Flo's whorehouse. Now, of course, you elderly people, you run off every year and you get your flu vaccine. Now, that increases your chances of getting Alzheimer's by 10 times. So if you want to give yourself Alzheimer's disease, you should have a flu shot every single year. Twice a year would probably double your chances. Maybe even do better, I don't know. Now, I personally don't want Alzheimer's disease. So when I read a paragraph that says that the chances of getting Alzheimer's disease is 10 times higher if an individual has 5 consecutive shots rather than 1, 2, or 0 shots. This is likely due to the thimerosal, a mercury-derived preservative and aluminum content of the vaccine. I say to myself, if this gives elderly people Alzheimer's disease, what in the world could we do by giving our children 30 shots with thimerosal in them by age 5? Can you imagine the potential? I don't know what it's going to do, but just imagine the potential. I'm sure that we can give our children a 100% chance of getting Alzheimer's disease if we just keep after it. You know, by the time this kid gets to be 35, 40, or 45, his brain ought to be just totally flawed. I happen to have a doctor in here the other day. I'm going to pass this on to all you people out there. I'm not going to tell you who this doctor is, because if we did that, he might get prosecuted. But this doctor was in class, and we were talking about something. I forget exactly what it was, and it came up that this autism, is probably caused by the thimerosal in the vaccine. Now, of course, all of the pundits and all of the health professionals deny it. Well, hell, I deny it too! What the hell? Do you think your doctor is going to say, well, I've been giving your kid this thimerosal-laced vaccine, you know, and it causes Alzheimer's disease, we think now, so why don't you go ahead and sue me? And I'll just give you a confession of judgment, and you can just take everything I've got. You think these doctors are stupid? Of course they're going to deny it. Just like the dentists deny that mercury in your fillings causes any adverse reactions. And if I had a client and I advised him to go ahead and confess, you know, that'd be stupid. Lawyers tell their clients to shut up. Deny everything. Shut up and deny everything. That's all they're doing, is shutting up and denying everything. Now, the recommendations to give flu vaccinations to children was adopted in March of 2003. These recommendations include vaccinating children between 2 and 18 years who live in households containing children younger than 2 years of age. The most common type of flu vaccine given to children is called Flozone, with each dose containing 25 UGs of mercury. CDC recommendations include administering the flu vaccine to children beginning at 6 months of age and then on an annual basis for the rest of their lives. Excuse me. I got a chuckle. Let me read that. The CDC recommends that you administer the flu vaccine to children beginning at 6 months of age. So when your kids reach 6 months, shoot them up with the flu vaccine. And then do it every single year for the rest of their lives. So by the time this guy gets to be 75 years old, he should have 76 shots, 76 flu vaccines, which contains 25 UGs of mercury. My God, that ought to guarantee that you get Alzheimer's disease. If it increases your chances by 10 times by just getting 5 shots, can you imagine how you can increase your chances of getting Alzheimer's disease if you'd get 76 shots, one every year, religiously, for 76 years? I mean, that ought to bring it up to absolute certainty, shouldn't it? If 5 consecutive flu vaccines will increase your chances of Alzheimer's by 10 times, 76 shots should bring absolute certainty. If you want Alzheimer's disease, let me recommend the flu vaccine every year until you succeed. Kind of like playing Russian roulette. There isn't any guarantee that if I pull the trigger in a 6-shot revolver with one bullet in the chamber, that I'm going to kill myself every single time I spin the barrel. But the odds are 1 in 6. And if I do it 36 times and I haven't killed myself yet, by golly, the chances are getting better with every spin of the barrel. I just thought I'd report that to you. Now, this is vaccination myth number 2. These vaccines are very effective. Well, are you really sure you want this vaccine to be very effective with what you've heard so far? And I'm just on number 2, and I'm only on page 2 of the report. This is about a 2, 4, 6, 8, 9-page report. Now, if you want to get this report, it's by Alan Phillips. Vaccine Awareness, P.O. Box 62282, Durham, North Carolina. Zip code is 27715-2282. Now, they've got an email here. I'll give you his email address. It says aphillip@email.unc.edu. So if you went to A. Phillip, that's just one word, APHILLIP, @email.unc.edu. Now, they got a website, or at least they did. It's called www.unc.edu. www.unc.edu. Hey, you could just plug vaccination into a Google search, and I'm sure that you'd come up. My file folder here on vaccination, oh, hell, it's, let me look here. It's a half inch thick. Probably pushing an inch. It's maybe 3/4 inch thick file folder. I probably have 20 articles in here on vaccination. Now, I'm not here to tell you that you shouldn't get vaccine. You shouldn't get a vaccination. I don't know what's good for you. I'm not here to recommend. We don't, here on the Law Hour, we don't tell people how to vote or tell you how to live your lives or what church to go to. Hell, I'm broad-minded, libertarian and all. But there's two sides to this vaccination thing, and you don't listen, you don't hear, you don't get that information from Katie Couric and Brian Williams. Those guys, they'll tell you about vaccinations, but they only tell you the positive side. And I'm sitting here saying, well, you know, coins have two sides to them. There's a heads and a tails. And when I buy a coin, you know, when I go into the coin store, and a guy says to me, hey, here's an MS-60. And so I look at the coin, and I pull out my loop, and I look at the head side, and I look at it, and I agree. I say, you know, this is an MS-60. Do you know something? always turn the coin over and look at the tail side to see if the tail side is also grading at MS-60, because what if the head side grades at MS-60 and the tail side grades at somewhere around VF-20? Would you then say that you got an MS-60 coin? No. No. If one side grades MS-60 and the other side grades VF-20, you've got a VF-20 coin. No, there's two sides to this. And it may well be that vaccines have some benefits to them. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're totally worthless. I just wanted to point out to you that, you know, there's some risk involved. Now, if you go out and get the polio vaccine, you may be one of those lucky 1 in 79 every year that gets polio. It's the only way you can get it now in the United States is from the vaccine. There are no reported cases. There hasn't been a single reported case of polio in the United States outside of those 79 that get it every year, on average 79, from the vaccine. So I think that the polio vaccine, if in fact it was the cause of the decline of polio, which I don't believe, but let's assume that it is, well, then you've succeeded. It's eradicated. So quit giving 79 people a year the vaccine. Hell no, we're not going to do that. Listen, it costs you $25 to get the vaccine times 48 million. 48 million, that equals $1.2 billion off of just that one vaccine. And the pediatricians are not going to give up $1.2 billion a year for the sake of 79 people that are going to get polio. All right, next item. The medical literature has a surprising number of studies documenting vaccine failure. Measles, mumps, smallpox, polio, and HIV outbreaks have all occurred in vaccinated populations. In 1989, the CDC reported among school-aged children, measles outbreaks have occurred in schools with vaccination levels of greater than 98%. They have occurred in parts of the country, including areas that had not reported measles for years. The CDC even reported a measles outbreak in a documented 100% vaccinated population. All right, so let's pause here and think about that for a minute. Most people get the vaccine. And when you go to school, you got vaccination levels of 97, 98, 99, 100%. And there are documented cases where in those areas where they have high immunization rates, where the disease breaks out among those people who have been vaccinated. Well, then what does that tell you about the effectiveness of the vaccine? See, they have a thing called placebo. And when they do a test, they give 100 people the drug, and they give 100 people sugar water. And then they bring you in. See, you don't know what you're getting. They say, well, how do you feel, Bob? Well, God, I feel kind of sicky today. And so they take down all of your vital statistics. And so they bring in Tom, and how do you feel, Tom? Well, I'm feeling kind of sicky today. See, you don't know whether you're getting the vaccine. The only guy that knows he's getting the vaccine, the only guy that knows he's getting the drug is the doctor that's conducting the test. And so they get through conducting the test, and they find out that the people who are on placebo, that is the sugar water, they get a certain result, and then the people that are on the drug, they get a certain result, and then they take a look at the two of them, and as it turns out, sometimes people that are on placebo, they turn out and they get well. They don't know why. They can't figure it out. The drug obviously didn't do anything for him. He wasn't getting the drug. But the disease went away, and he got well. And so that's what they call spontaneous remission. Then they got this other group over here. They were getting the drug, and 75% of them got well, and 25% of them got worse or didn't get well or whatever. And so they say, well, that drug's a real success because it has a 75% effectiveness. See what they're doing there? All right, now, when we take a look at this myth number two, you got 100% of the people that are vaccinated,
and they get a bunch of measles in here. Well, obviously, this vaccine was totally ineffective. Wake up! If you've been vaccinated against measles and you get measles, then the vaccine was ineffective, dummy. God, can you imagine how sick I'd have been if I hadn't had the vaccine? God, you talk about fairy tales and fairyland. If I hadn't had the vaccine, God, can you imagine how sick I'd be? All right. How about truth number two? Evidence suggests that vaccination is an unreliable means of preventing disease. The evidence shows that vaccination is an unreliable means of preventing disease. Now, if you believe that vaccination prevents disease, you know, maybe it makes you feel real good. You know, maybe it's like sex on Friday night. I don't know. If that's what turns you on, we'll get after it. But, you know, I'm not going down to the fairy house to feed the fairies cookies. And I'm not going to go down and get my vaccines because I'm afraid of getting the flu this year. And I may get flu. I'm not telling you. You know, I'm an old man. Hell, I might get the flu. But if I die from the flu, it won't be vaccine-induced. That's the other half of it. And I might get Alzheimer's. I wouldn't deny it. I lived a pretty hard life. But it won't be caused by the thimerosal in the flu vaccine. So I'm going to be one of those that's not in that 10 times greater group. I'm going to avoid that flu vaccine like AIDS, herpes, and VD. Then there's vaccination myth number three. Vaccines are the main reason for low disease rates in the United States today. Or are they? And so the vaccination myth number four. Vaccination is based on sound immunization theory and practice. Or is it? No, it isn't. Vaccination myth number five. Childhood diseases are extremely dangerous. No. Childhood diseases are not very dangerous. I had all of the childhood diseases. Didn't kill me. And I never got them again. But you know, if you vaccinate your child against measles, you got to vaccinate this kid every year, they tell you. And then if the kid gets measles, they say, oh my God, thank God you were getting him vaccinated every year. Can you imagine how sick this kid would be if you didn't have him vaccinated for measles? If you'd have left that kid alone, he would have got the measles when he was about 6 or 8 or 10 years old. And that would have been the last time in his life he'd ever get measles. You people are out there vaccinating your kids and paying $25 every year to do it. And then they still get the measles. And then you say, oh my God, can you imagine how sick he'd be if I hadn't had him vaccinated? Hell, the disease itself was never a threat to him. Well, it was a 1 in 7 million threat. You know, every 7 millionth kid dies from it. But every 1,750th kid dies from the vaccine. All right, so much for that myth. So let me give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard more than 112 countries daily around the world over the Internet. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. Now, the law school is a private, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, we're out of time. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.